Today on Straight Talk Africa, the key to peaceful political transitions of power in Africa. What will it take for the majority of Africa's nations to conduct transparent, credible elections and smooth transitions of power from one leader to another? We discuss developments in Liberia, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Kenya, to name a few. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and around the world. I'm Ayan Bior, your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion on the key issues needed for peaceful political transitions of power in Africa.
And coming up later, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook, and Twitter comments. We'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
Meanwhile, Africa's bumpy road to democratic, peaceful transfers of power has been paved with successes, shocks, and setbacks. VOA's Hyde Adams Fitzpatrick looks at some examples.
The ability of African countries to manage multi-party elections and ensure peaceful transfers of power is like a tale of two continents. During the best of times, African leaders are willing to give up power for the sake of peace. At the worst of times, they're strongmen, holding on to it at any cost. In coming weeks, two pivotal presidential elections are set to play out on opposite sides of the continent. A rerun in Kenya and a runoff in Liberia, each set to send a powerful message about whether electoral democracy has truly taken root. There were promising signs in Angola earlier this year when José Eduardo dos Santos retired after nearly four decades in power. His hand-picked successor, João Lourenço, won the September election with 61% of the vote. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, where no leader has ever given up power peacefully, many election observers are wondering if President Joseph Kabila will continue that dubious trend. The DRC's Electoral Commission recently said it would not be ready to hold elections until April 2019 at the earliest. The commission had previously pushed back the election date until December 2018, but now says it needs more time to enroll voters and organize polls. The delay keeps Kabila in power until then. His refusal to step down after his mandate ended last year has triggered a political crisis and protests across the country. When it comes to peaceful transfers of power, Ghana is considered Africa's shining example. In the run-up to the 2016 vote, there was concern the Electoral Commission was politicized. Someone tried to hack the Electoral Commission's website on election day. Before the vote, police were prepared for violence. But in the end, John Mahama turned over power to Nana Akufo-Addo and his new patriotic party without incident. Nigeria made history in 2015 when Muhammadu Buhari became the country's first opposition leader to oust an incumbent president at the polls. Goodluck Jonathan conceded, handing over the reins of Africa's biggest economy and most populous nation to his longtime rival. In the Gambia, Yahya Jammeh's 22-year rule came to a stunning end after he lost to businessman Adama Barrow. In the country's first ever peaceful transfer of power, Jammeh flew into exile, a milestone and a message that elections do count and dictators do fall, increasing the continent's prospects for peaceful elections and transfers of power, even as Africa's band of presidents for life continues to shrink. Hyde Adams Fitzpatrick, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Hyde, for that interesting report. For the latest political developments from Liberia, we are joined by my colleague James Bate himself, the managing editor of VOA's Daybreak Africa radio broadcast. Good afternoon, James.
Thank you, Shaka. So nice to be here.
How are you?
Feeling good.
What can you tell us about the last elections in Liberia? Who is the next president of Liberia? Do we know so far?
Well, we are waiting for, as Liberians are waiting for the final results of the October 10 elections. The last results we had last week was that Senator George Weah of the Coalition for Democratic Change was leading the pact with 39.5% of the vote, followed by the Vice President Joseph Boakai with 29% of the vote. You had Charles Bramskin of the Liberty Party in third place, and Alexander Cummins, the former Coca-Cola executive of the Alternative National Congress, in fourth place. As late as this Tuesday, there were reports. In fact, Mr. Cummins came out on Tuesday to say that he was exploring the possibility of challenging the results of the first round. And just today, Wednesday, the Liberty Party, Charles Bramskin, indicated that he was going to present a petition to the National Elections Commission tomorrow, Thursday, with about 10,000 of his supporters to challenge the results. So that's where we are, and the final results should be announced by October 25th.
Now, James, normally when a vice president is running, you expect the boss, the incumbent president, to be behind that particular individual. What happened to Vice President Boakai? He doesn't seem, frankly, to be enjoying the support of President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf.
There has been this friction, although when you talk to the vice president people, they say that there's no friction between the vice president and President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. During my trip to Liberia early September, I met with the vice president and asked him whether he was going to get the support of the president in a public way. The vice president launched his campaign on the 15th of September, but the president did not show up. The vice president said that as much as he needed the support of all party members of the ruling Unity Party, each of them would do so at their own will. So if the president came out to support him, he would welcome that, but that he was willing to do it on his own power. If he were to be president, elected president, he was going to do so on his own power, according to the national chairman of the Unity Party.
You know, this is very interesting because it reminds me of the U.S. presidential election of 2000, when, of course, at the time, Bill Clinton was the president. And, of course, you remember Al Gore himself didn't want, in fact, to be anywhere near President Clinton. Is it possible that, in fact, Vice President Boakai has actually been distancing himself from the incumbent president? And if so, why?
Perhaps you can think about it in that way, that some people have used this the kind of language that perhaps for the vice president's own good, perhaps he should do it on his own, that if at all anything that tainted the current administration, that he did not want to be associated with it. When you talk to the vice president, he said although he was the vice president for 12 years, he was just the vice president. He wants to be president now, so no one can say that he should be blamed for anything that happened in the current administration, that he was just vice president, that he did his work as vice president, as every vice president will do. So no one can blame him for anything that might have happened in this current administration.
Talk to us about the front runner, of course, George Weah. We know that he used at one time perhaps to be Africa's best footballer. What makes him tick, really? Did he distinguish himself as a senator?
That's the popularity of George Weah. Many people who support him think that Weah, during the troubled times of Liberia, the Civil War, that Weah came in and he did help with the difficulty that people were going through. So apart from him being a former footballer, people associate with him that way. The question that people are asking is, Weah ready for prime time to be the leader of Liberia? Some people indicate that he does not have the policy knowledge or maybe the education. But other people say that with the developments these days around the world, when you look around, different individuals are becoming leaders of their country. You cannot use the issue of education to be a yardstick for anybody to be the leader of any country.
Is it really that very important, or is it perhaps, as some people have suggested, that in fact what you need in leadership really is character and integrity?
Well, that's it. That's it. And some people think, we are supposed to think that he has the character and integrity. There's still people who challenge that. I think what remains to be seen, Chaka, is that when the final results are finally announced on October 25th, what is it that we are, whose party has been in the second round for the last three elections, what is it now that he's going to do to bring himself and his supporters finally across the finishing line? How is he going to negotiate with the other smaller parties that are taking perhaps the third, the fourth, and the second place? How is he going to bring them together to come and support him so that finally, if he wants to be president, because I think that's the only way he can be elected, by getting other candidates to support him.
What about the fact that he happens to have a running mate, of course, who is very closely associated with the former Liberian president, Charles Taylor? In fact, there are reports that Charles Taylor has actually been on the phone campaigning for the ticket. To what extent did that either help George Weah or undercut him?
Well, I don't know if Charles Taylor has been on the phone campaigning for Weah, but I do know that Weah himself has admitted that he did have communications with Charles Taylor. Sometime last year or so, Charles Taylor did put in a phone call from London. People were wondering how did he do it when he is supposed to be in jail. He did put in a phone call to his supporters in Monrovia during their party meeting. So people are saying, in fact, there was something while I was in Liberia, people were saying that I think one of the candidates, either Joe Howard Taylor or somebody from the Coalition for Democratic Change of George Weah, might have said in Banga, in Bong County, central Liberia, that, that Charles Taylor, that in fact, the ambassador in London just said to me in an interview that Charles Taylor was ready, he was a changed man, that he can be able to come back to Liberia to, make his contribution. So that remains to be seen, whether that falls in line with the International Criminal Court where he is in jail, whether he can come back to Liberia, who has the power to let him come back to Liberia. Of course, you're right. So some people are saying, why did George Weah or Juwa Howard Taylor, why do they associate with Charles Taylor? But again, if you look at it, maybe in central Liberia, where Charles Taylor once had his headquarters, he enjoys tremendous support.
Now, talk to me again, James. You know as well as I do that the last time your country experienced a sort of peaceful democratic transfer of power was about 70 years ago. How does it feel now that it looks like you are actually headed for a peaceful transition of power?
Well, thank you for that. And maybe Liberia did well then. That's the fear for many people. President Sirleaf, during the last 12 years, has touted her ability to maintain peace in Liberia. Now, the question is whether that peace can be sustained as she gets ready to leave. The fear is that with the United Nations peacekeepers concluding their tour last June, June 16, 2016, there will be kind of a security vacuum in the event that anything happens, anything like violence happen, there is a security vacuum. But my discussion with the defense minister and some members in the police force They say that the Liberian security forces are ready to make sure that there is a peaceful transition. Of course, it will depend what happens in the results of this current election. If some people feel so aggrieved that they feel disenfranchised, who knows what their supporters will do? So it really will depend how well the Election Commission can make sure that everything is peaceful, that the Election Commission itself is as transparent as possible in releasing these current results.
Final question. To what extent would you say that this election was based on issues and not personalities?
Well, I think it cuts both ways. I think some people enjoy the support they had because of their personality. I would say, for example, George Weah, because George Weah did not show up for the presidential debate, the first one, and he did not show up for the second debate. Yet, he is leading the pack of 20 or so political presidential candidates. So I would say in that respect, it was based on personality. Some people did discuss issues. I was in Liberia early September, and I had a chance to talk with Mr. Cummings. They had a debate, and many people thought that Alexander Cummings of the Alternative National Congress, an outsider who had not been in politics before, did well because he continued during that debate and even thereafter to talk about the issue. What exactly is he going to do if and when he is elected president? So, yes, you're right. Both personality and on the issues.
Well, on that note, James, thank you so much for your insight.
Thank you.
And joining us here in the studios are three distinguished guests. Dr. Korir Singoi, Legal Advisor, Executive Office of the Deputy President of the Republic of Kenya. The Hindura Mulegwa, attorney and a former presidential spokesman for President Joseph Kabila of the Democratic Republic of Congo. And Mbuyamu Ilankir Matungulu, National Chairman, Congo Nabiso, an opposition political party in the DRC. Well, I have to say, gentlemen, frankly, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome, and especially, of course, Korir, you say that you've been a fan of Straight Talk Africa for a very long time.
Absolutely.
It's a pleasure, of course, having the opportunity to host you again on Straight Talk Africa for the first time, and it's also equally a pleasure, Doctor, for coming here for the first time. You, of course, Mulegwa, you've been here several times.
Exactly.
It's a pleasure seeing you again. Later in the program, we'll give you, our audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Korir. You heard, of course, James talking about Liberia. It is about 70 years ago, the last time that that country, the one probably country, by the way, other than Ethiopia, which probably has the distinction of not having been colonized, so to speak, the last time they experienced peaceful, democratic transition of power is 70 years ago. Why?
Well, I think first we really must commend what is happening in the Republic of Liberia, and we wish them well in their quest for peaceful transfer of power. I think just speaking in relation to the Kenyan context, I think it's difficult for us to really conceive of this, Sally, because Kenya is going through its sixth election since the introduction of multi-party democracy in 1992.
Correct.
And there has been periodic transfers of power every 10 years first by Moi, you know, in 2003 to President Kibaki.
2002, actually.
2002 to President Kibaki.
That was great.
Absolutely. It was
and
a powerful,
probably was the last
moment.
Great election, in fact, Kenya had.
You know, I would differ, but, you know, the point is that 2002 came and we handed and power was handed over to a new president. And 2013, the same president handed over power to the incumbent president, Uhuru Kenyatta.
And so
for the Kenyan, you know, for the Kenyan situation, I really have to say that periodic elections and periodic handing over of power is now completely institutionalized in our own context.
Corey, when you talk about periodic, you sometimes probably make some people very uncomfortable, frankly, because they think a guy like you should be talking about the quality of an election. An election that is free, or at least be seen to be free, fair, transparent, credible, and verifiable. The only election, frankly, that fits that category so far in your recent Kenyan history has to be the election of 2002, and the chairman of the Electoral Commission of Kenya at the time was a Mr. Samuel Kivuitu. Correct?
Correct, but of course...
And nobody complained, really.
Of course. Of course, I beg to disagree with you.
But nobody complained.
I think the point, Sally, is this, that Kenyan politics is highly contested. You know, we are really talking about a democracy. In a democracy, there is serious contestation for political power. Neither the ruling party nor the opposition can say that they have complete and total sway over
right.
the body politic.
You are right.
And so the mere fact, Sally,
yeah.
that the results of an election are challenged in court
yes.
does not in any way suggest that there was something wrong with the election.
Really?
No.
Come on, man.
No. Because that is what happened in 2013.
First of all,
the
first
losing
of all,
candidate.
Let's go back to 2007. What would you say about that election?
I think the reality is that 2007 was an unfortunate development.
In what sense?
In the sense of the violence.
It was rigged.
In the sense of the violence.
It was a rigged election.
The point.
And I have to tell you, there is incontrovertible evidence. Not liable to falter. You are a lawyer.
Yes.
You know that.
Judge Krigler, who is a South African judge, who came to audit the electoral process mm-hmm. and the electoral results, mm-hmm. found that he could not say for certain uh-huh. whether rigging had taken
who
place.
Won?
And what he went ahead to say, and which is much more important, is that there had to be regulatory, legislative, and constitutional changes to ensure that our system of elections is freer, is more credible, and the understanding that it's all going to be progressive, Sally. This journey of democratization is a progressive journey.
I have to say that when it comes to pomp and pageantry, you are probably one of the best countries on the African continent in terms of, frankly, conducting elections. But when it comes to counting the vote, and when it comes to announcing the result, it has been found, and a lot of people agree, that in 2007, for example, 2013, the results that were announced were not reflections of the will of the people, but rather the will of the announcer of the vote or the will of those who counted the vote.
You have a right to your opinion on this one, Sally.
It's not
my
opinion.
I really sincerely beg to disagree.
It's not my opinion.
Because the 2013 result was contested in court.
Yes.
The courts, the Supreme Court,
yes.
determined
yes.
that there were irregularities.
Yes.
But that those irregularities, in line with our law, did not materially impact on the outcome.
Of course,
okay?
Of course, that was said.
Because an election, by definition, is a uh-huh. is a huge enterprise. It's a complex logistical operation. 40,000 polling centers across the country. there will be irregularities. There will be administrative mistakes made. Mm. But the will and the sovereignty of the people has been reflected in those elections. I can tell you that, Sally.
So what about the August the 8th?
Indeed.
2017.
Indeed.
So what happened?
I think first we must really, really commend the Kenyan people.
Correct.
We are talking about...
Correct.
Out of 19,000...
The Kenyan people, no doubt.
Absolutely. Out of 19 million Kenyans
but
who are registered...
But the Independent Electoral and the Boundaries Commission, which some, by the way, have suggested that perhaps it should actually be renamed the Jubilee Electoral and the Boundaries Commission.
That is sensational, Sally. But let me go back to the point, which is that 15 million out of 19 million Kenyans voted on 8th of August.
What did, okay? What did the Chief Justice,
Uhuru
David
Kenyatta,
Maraga, say?
The President of Kenya, won that election. Now, Raila Odinga challenged the elections before the Supreme Court, as was his right under the Constitution. Judge Maraga and his colleagues at the Supreme Court, by a majority, by the way,
yes.
Okay, nullified the elections.
Because?
Absolutely. Because of this. Because of this. The court determined that the process of transmission of results was problematic. Okay? So it was nothing to do with
that. What do you mean problematic?
In other words...
The court ordered, for example, the IEBC to provide access to the server. Up to now, as we talk, it has never been accessed. Why?
I don't think we want to relitigate the matter before the Supreme Court, Sally. I think the point is this, okay? That the Supreme Court found that the transmission of results was not sufficiently verifiable.
And the ruling was?
Okay. And the ruling was that the election stood nullified.
But
the ruling said nothing about the votes that were cast in favor of these candidates.
Well, first of all,
the ruling said nothing about the outcome.
First of all,
those elections.
The election obviously was annulled precisely because, at least according to the Supreme Court, the process did not adhere to the laws and the Constitution of Kenya. To the extent that, in fact, the court determined there was no election on August 8th, because the server, in fact, was even fed right from the day before the election.
The court did not make that determination, Sally.
You are a lawyer yourself. You obviously have been following the Kenyan election because Kenya is a regional superpower. Kenya, there are a lot of great things that happen there. And Kenya, frankly, does not only belong to Kenyans, it belongs to the region, the continent, and all of us really rolled into one.
Well, I've always considered Kenya as one of my country. And I went to Bible school in Buruburu, in Kenya. So I think the problem in Kenya is, you know, the context in Kenya needed that people would prepare for elections. There was not enough preparations. You know, people are always rushing and pushing people into going into an inclusive political system, into holding elections without preparing the people in the country. I give you an example of my own country. You know, today you are following the situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where everybody is rushing for us to go to the elections. Well, that's fine. We will go to the elections. But people need to be prepared, because we are talking about the key to peaceful transitions.
Mlegwa, Kenya's election was not due to lack of time or preparation. The election was prepared very well. The process went very well. People were dancing and what have you. Even the voting date, very, very well. The only problem, my friend, came to counting the vote.
The transmission, actually. Not even the counting.
Well, obviously, there are contradictions.
The vote as announced at the polling centers and the constituency centers.
Look at Form 34A and Form 34B. some of these forms were actually originating from overseas.
That is not true, Sally. These are allegations that were not quite proven.
Let me follow up. Wait a minute. You have your time, please. Yes. You have your time. Talk to us now about the DRC. Are you trying to justify what is happening or not happening in the DRC?
I don't know what you mean by not happening in the DRC. If you're talking about the fact that we've not held the elections yet, there's nothing that I'm justifying or unjustifying. We will hold the elections in the Democratic Republic of Congo because this is a process.
But you were supposed to have held elections in DRC before December 2016.
Correct.
The last time I checked, this is 2017.
The most important thing is not to hold the elections. The most important thing is to hold credible elections, that nobody will contest the elections, as my colleague on my left was saying here.
When did your country last hold credible elections?
We had our first ever one-man, one-vote elections in 2006. The second one was in 2011. And there were problems leading to 2016. And the president of the Democratic Republic of Congo, when he noticed that there were problems, he tried to mobilize the opposition, said, look, we have some problems here. We need credible elections. We need to hold credible elections. And the only way to do that is we all have to come, sit around the table to hold credible elections. We don't want elections in the DRC at any cost, just elections. And then you will have problems like my good friends in Kenya have held, you know, because of the lack of preparations. So elections will be held in the Democratic Republic of Congo, but we want in Congo credible elections.
How do you respond to some people who will say, wait a minute, the last credible election, the last election that people are very proud of in Congolese history was the election that ushered in the independence of your country on June 30th, 1960, won by a gentleman called Patrice Emery Lumumba?
Yes. Yes, those were elections, and these were elections. And Patrice Lumumba was voted by his peers. Okay? He was voted by his peers. He was not voted by the population. But the first time we've had elections, one man, one vote, the system, the inclusive political system, was brought to the Democratic Republic of Congo by the first time by one man, as you call one man, President Joseph Kabila.
What about you, Mbuyamu? You come from the same country?
Yes.
You actually happen to be a cabinet minister in Joseph Kabila's first government, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. Well, one thing that's important that I wanted to raise before even I get to discussing the situation that is specific to the Democratic Republic of Congo is the fact that when you look at the situation, what we've seen developments, political developments on the continent in the last decade, I think it is fair to say that the great majority of the population in Africa, particularly in the major cities, are embracing democracy. We've got the right, or I would say the duty, the obligation, therefore, as leaders, as the elite, to make sure that we focus on building the institutions, democratic institutions that are cropping up across the continent.
But institutions are run by...
Now,
human beings.
Well, that's exactly why I'll get to that. If we talk about the situation in which we are today, Democratic Republic of Congo, my friend here is talking about the fact that we don't want to rush. You know, we don't want to get into a preparation process that eventually leads to faulty elections. I would agree to that. But what has happened in the case of the Democratic Republic of Congo is simply that if you go back to right after the elections, 2011, starting in 2013, I would say, all the way to 2016, the country has spent time discussing about the opportunity, the rationale eventually, for amending the constitution so that President Kabila could have an opportunity to stand for the third time.
But that's fair.
It was. That's what I'm saying. Time wasted that we should have been investing in preparing for those elections. This is critically important. I think it has to be brought up and underlined. Now, okay, in the situation in which we are today, the question is, We were supposed to have had that elections before those elections before the end of 2016. We haven't. Then there was an agreement with the opposition, between the opposition and the majorité présidentielle, as you know, at the end of 2016, for the election to be held in 2017 latest.
That's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen either. Now, somebody is certainly responsible for this.
I see.
And in my background, when you have a leader who's topping an institution, as people say, the buck stops here.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to account. Why are we unable? You know, 6 years now, we're going into 7 years, seventh year after his election, the country is unable to accomplish what's the most important democratic task of any administration.
But I'm sure that if you ask President Joseph Kabila about that, he will probably refer you to the DRC Electoral Commission. Correct?
Well, I mean, the DRC Electoral Commission nowadays, we know this is something that is only independent by name.
And then he can also talk.
Issues that,
he can also
today.
Tell you about, of course, the Constitutional Court ruling. So are you suggesting here that perhaps the judiciary system in your country and the legislature are subordinate to the executive led by President Kabila?
No, but I think this is very clear. That's something that everybody agrees with because, you know, even in this country, we're talking out of, from this studio of the Voice of America in Washington, D.C., the Constitution and the practice here in this country also have it, as you know, that the president will stay in position, in power, until the new elected president is sworn in. And this is a period for the United States between November and January.
I'm afraid
that's what the Constitution talks about.
I'm afraid, Buyami, that there is no democracy in Studio 52. If the producer tells me to go, I have to go.
Okay, of course. Of course.
It's time to bring in our social media reporter, Ayen Bior. Take it away, Ayen.
Well, thanks, Ishaka. We received excellent social media feedback this week from Liberia's peaceful transition of power from President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf to the ongoing uncertainty in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where President Joseph Kabila's term ended December 2016. But he remains in power. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asked, what are the key factors that lead to peaceful transitions of power in Africa? Well, let's start the conversation with a tweet from Bruno Chiller, who tweets, total respect of the Constitution and people's will. And we have another tweet from Prince Habat Nkula. He writes, the other thing is citizens who know how to protect and defend the Constitution and the willingness of the leader of a leader to hand over presidency. Well, now to our social media comment of the week from Facebook fan Simwanga Edward in Uganda, who writes, a major factor that leads to peaceful transitions of power in Africa is institutional development. African dictators fear any peaceful handover of power because of their multi-involvement in all government affairs. They intentionally kill relevant institutions so they can do what they want. Well, that's very interesting. Let's go to another comment from Facebook fan Namwanza Miyoba, who writes, peaceful transitions of power is a result of independent electoral and judicial systems, along with limiting the presidential mandate to no more than 2 terms. And our last Facebook comment comes from Chrissy Mumba, who writes, respecting the rule of law and accepting defeat links to peaceful transitions of power. It is wrong for any leader to think that only they should lead and no one else. It will take generations for Africa to develop because too much time is spent on fighting each other at the expense of the continent's development. Very interesting. A reminder that we appreciate all of the audience feedback. If you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. To comment on our Facebook page, just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. To join our YouTube channel, sign up to VOA TV to Africa. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on our Facebook page, or simply go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website. To watch us live on your mobile device, just simply download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. On the next Straight Talk Africa, a look at Kenya's opposition protest and election confusion as the nation prepares for a repeat presidential vote on October 26th. Citing irregularities, Kenya's Supreme Court nullified the result of the August 8th presidential poll, in which the incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta defeated Raila Odinga. Understanding Kenya's presidential election on the next Straight Talk Africa. Well, that's all for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and the guests have a lot of social media comments to discuss. Back to you.
Thank you very much, Ayen, for sharing with us some social media reaction from the audience. And of course, today we are discussing the keys to peaceful political transitions of power in Africa. And our guests are Korir Singoi, Vihindura Mulegwa, and Mbuyamu Ilankir Matunguru. Again, gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Now, Mbuyamu, of course, I really have to apologize for interjecting, because as I suggested to you, there is no democracy when it comes to broadcasting in the studios. You have to follow the orders or the instructions of the producer, just like a loyal, disciplined soldier on a military parade ground.
Of course.
And I hope that you find some space in your beautiful Congolese hat to forgive me for that. And next time, take me to Matonge. Could you please, pick up from where you left so that you can conclude your point? You have 1 minute, please.
Yes, thank you very much. I was saying, as far as I'm concerned, I think, and as far as the great majority of the population of the Democratic Republic of Congo apparently are concerned, in a lot of the things that have happened in the last 3 years, we would have wanted to see the president be more active in pressuring the commission, the Electoral Commission, in making sure that the executive branch of government is doing exactly what it takes. And I think also in engaging with the international community, just to make sure that where we have weaknesses, logistical, in terms of finance, and so on, we can get the support that, in principle, should also be available to us as a member of the international community. So this is where we are today. The great question going forward is, what do we do? How do we make sure finally that this election is held so that the population can choose the new leadership that they want for the country?
But what about the government's, for example, point that your country has not enjoyed peace and stability? You always have, of course, people fighting on the eastern part of the country, and even now you have fighting sometimes in Kasai, that you also had not been able, for example, to register voters so that the country could be really ready for the next election, and you also didn't have the money. What about that kind of argument?
Well, first of all, I think in terms of registering voters, as you know, about the great majority of the country has gone through that process. Right now, we're looking into how we bring the Kasai provinces into the process so that at some point, I'm hoping before the end of the year, you have all the voters registered so that we can go to the actual voting. One point that I wanted to make, I think that's critically important, is that When I look at the way the electoral process is being managed in the country, I have a sense, looking at the National Election Committee, that you know, they are operating as people apparently who are not seeing the urgency of the situation. People think that we have still time, in fact, a lot of time to waste, even though, as we know, this election was supposed to have taken place before the end of 2016. And why am I saying that? In the case of the Kasai province, for instance, as I'm saying, the rest of the country has completed the registration process. The only port that is still remaining today, for the most part, is the Kasai province.
Kasai province.
Provinces.
Oh. I think they are in Kasai right now. The last time I think I came across a figure, they are talking about in the neighborhood of 40 million registered voters. 42.
Already registered. Yeah. So what I'm saying is the following. If you take the equipment that was used for Kinshasa, for instance, and the expertise. Kinshasa is a city of in excess of 10 million people. Registration has already been concluded there. And you have the equipment that was used there. You have the expertise that was created in the process of doing this, you know, with local people who were trained to do this. As far as I'm concerned, I think it could have been possible to redeploy a lot of this equipment and capacity and expertise in the Kasai province so that we are able to complete the registration process sooner than the date of, I'm hearing, December or January 31st of 2018 that the National Elections Committee is looking into. The same thing, we, the commission has talked about needing 504 days to complete the process so that, you know, this reference, you have this reference to elections eventually taking place in April, May of next year.
Right.
But if you look at some of the actions that are supposed to take place, the steps that have to be taken, they have to be taken between now and the time when this election actually takes place, it is possible to compress a lot of that. But for reasons that in the eyes of many in Congo, having to do with the fact that they want this glissement, as we call it in the country, to go on forever, every single action, as far as I'm concerned, that could require 2 days under the commission that we now have would be scheduled to be executed over 10, why not 20 days. And this is a really very serious issue.
So are you one of those people who either believe or suspect that Mr. Kabila probably is thinking about just being like, you know, one of his peers in that general neighborhood? Because let's face it, if you cross the Congo River, you get Sassou Nguesso, who basically shifted the constitutional political goalposts. Remove the term limits.
You
talk about Rwanda.
You
have pretty much the same case. Uganda, pretty much the same case. Until recently, of course, you had Angola, where José Eduardo dos Santos basically reigned for 38 years.
But I think the better comparison right now is the one with President Gbagbo of Cote d'Ivoire, as you know, who remained in power for about 10 days. Without elections being held in this country. The neighborhood that you're citing, of course, could move in a better direction of, you know, change in leadership. This is important to clean up. But there is nobody in the region that is staying in power without having been elected one way or the other. I think the better comparison is the one with you know, the Cote d'Ivoire with President Gbagbo at the time when he was there.
I see. And interesting. Let me go to the lifeline of the show very briefly. And those are the telephone callers. Good evening, Johnson from Liberia. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Johnson, can you hear me?
Hello, I can hear you.
What is your question, please? Very briefly.
Well, first of all, let me say this. I am a good show holder. But let me make my point, please. This is about understanding what you want to talk about.
You have a minute, Johnson.
But I want to say the word terrific, this show is beyond terrific now. So let's get rid of that terrific thing and talk something different. But my question is, integrity holds a lot.
I'm afraid we seem to have lost the line, Johnson. Let's go to Paul from Cape Town, I hope in South Africa. Good evening, Paul.
Yes. Good evening, Shaka. How are you?
I am hugely terrific. How are you?
I'm good.
I beg your pardon? Thank you so much. Tell me, my friend, what is your question or comment, or both?
Yes, my comment first. I want to thank you for the show and for those gentlemen. It is the African issue discussed by African man. But I'm just disappointed with the courier. I don't know what happens when some people, all some of us, join. These are things I have known, for instance, as the Wawa NGO was. But my comment is, and as you alluded to, I think it is the general trend in the Great Lakes region now to make sure that we keep the goalposts, make sure that we don't follow the goalposts. Power is concerned. So, so what colleagues may have to say about the trend that has taken place? As I said, I'm comfortable when you say that the court sort of made a mistake. Is he not trusting or believing in the integrity of the court and what the court came up with? Is he trying to deny that there was or illegalities, something of the court? Yes. Compared to the Ugandan election, I think we need to give a great respect to the court in Kenya was really on the spot. And if it continues like the way we are seeing,
thank you.
I think we don't need to see the chaos 2007-2000.
Thank you.
Mr. Saka, if you could comment on the media and now on the BBC, the commissioner was resigned.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I don't really know whether, Korir, you really heard the gist, you know, of the comment or, you know, question or both. But I think what came out, at least for me, was that when you look at the Great Lakes region, you basically pretty much have people who have shifted the constitutional political goalposts so that they can actually become, some might say, presidential monarchs, which does not affect Kenya in whatever we are told. But then for Kenya, I think he sort of alluded to the significance of the Kenyan Supreme Court ruling, which is very unique, really, on the continent, for that matter. But then he also alluded to Dr. Rosemary Akombe, Dr. Rosemary Akombe, the IEBC commission, of course, who resigned. And by the way, I had the opportunity to talk to her via telephone link up in New Jersey this morning. And she talked, of course, about how, yes, the IEBC, she thinks, can hold an election, but that election would not in any way at all adhere to the requirement or demand of the Kenyan Supreme Court, which said this election has to adhere to Kenyan laws and constitution. It has to be free, fair, transparent, credible, and verifiable.
Thank you, Shaka. You know, I think I completely agree with the listener when, you know, he makes the case that incumbents should be able to hand over power. That is the spirit and the principle of the African Charter for Democracy and Elections, which is very, very clear that elections should be free, they should be credible, they should be fair. And if an incumbent loses an election, they should hand over power. Now, I made the argument earlier on that in Kenya, we have seen incumbents handing over power. The decision of the Supreme Court, like you said, is a very important decision. It is a decision that was very clear that an election is not an event, but a process. But the process that the court spotlighted mainly was the process of transmission, because the court did not have a problem with all the other processes until the transmission process.
What about the server?
That's part of the transmission.
Yeah,
it's a component of the transmission.
But can you explain to us why the IEBC to date, as we talk, and you are expected to have a repeat of an election on October 26th next week? Can you explain to us why that server has not been accessed to the people it should have been accessed? What does it contain? Surely somebody must be protecting something.
You see, I think that is what we have really lost focus about.
Why?
This election was not about a server.
Come on, man.
It's about the will of the Kenyan people.
And how do
which you... has been exercised across the country in 40,000 polling centers. Results have been declared across all those polling centers. The process is the technological interface for transmission that they found a problem with.
Unfortunately, my friend, there is a man called Ezra Chiroba, the CEO of the IEBC Secretariat, who apparently engaged in what some would call creative accounting. In other words, yes, if in fact you could open that server,
Shaka,
you probably would actually get the results of the Kenyan people.
I think that is not what democracy is.
Why don't you open the server?
That is not what democracy
is. Why don't you open the server so that people can
the mantra around the server is just making this election about technology as opposed to people.
No. It has nothing to do with technology.
Okay? And that is why by the way, the requirement for electronic transmission is not a constitutional requirement.
You know what?
It is a statutory requirement.
Now you are talking about, you are getting into legalisms.
All right?
We are talking about ordinary people like me.
What do ordinary people know about a server, Sally?
Who did not go to school. They know that that server contains important information. In fact, you will even find footprints right there. Even if you erased or whatever, you'll find copies there.
Okay.
That is probably the reason why people who are in power do not feel comfortable with opening it, because the Supreme Court ordered for it to be opened. You have the last point. Unfortunately, time really is not a bestseller. I wish you were here next week, because we have a Kenyan show.
Right quickly, I heard my very good friend Professor Matungulu talk about the process and how much the process in the DRC.
You have 30 seconds.
It's taking too long. Anyway, very quickly, we've already registered 42 million people. People are talking about this 504 days that the Electoral Commission said. The 504 days Electoral Commission was not done by the Electoral Commission. This was by the technical people from the OIF, Mr. Sangari, experts from MONUSCO, and other experts who talked about this 504 days. That's how many days we need following the registration process. We need 504 days to hold the election. So people need to avoid. People are now favoring.
Unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally.
Okay.
And on that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Dr. Koriri Singoi, Zihindura Mulegwa, and Dr. Mbuyamu Ilanka Matungulu. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, for many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.